Pittsburgh Public Schools are wrapping up the year, and soon students will be out for the summer. For many, that will mean spending time with friends, splashing in pools, and going to camps. Early childhood and elementary educators hope that students also spend a good amount of time with books. I'm Sarah Schneider, and in this hour-long education special, we will explore why raising skilled readers is so critical, and why for many students, just having access to books isn't enough. Teachers at Beechwood Elementary School in the southern part of the city hammer home the importance of summer reading. They even get the students to preach it. Recently, the school's cheerleaders marched across the stage, pom-poms in hand, and encouraged the audience of younger students to read more books.
10, 20, 30 books! Open any and take a look. Picture it, wonder it, figure it out what this book is all about.
They even sing about reading with their music teacher. She rewrites pop songs like this one of Lady Gaga's Bad Romance with lyrics about improving reading scores. Tammy Schmidt is one of the school's teachers who danced with the kids and beamed at every mention of books. Research shows it is most important for these students to have an effective teacher. Schmidt is a literacy coach. Her position is one of the tools the Pittsburgh district has deployed to make sure teachers are shaping skilled readers. Schmidt taught third grade for more than a decade before she switched to instructing teachers. Now she's in classrooms helping educators craft lessons and better assess student progress.
The biggest thing is just to build the trust, you know, with the teachers so that they do feel comfortable coming to me. You know, I'm not evaluating them at all. It's just I'm there to be a support person.
She spent the last couple of weeks reviewing data with teachers to gauge how their students' English language arts proficiency improved over the year. Together, they discussed what additional support students will need next year. For third grade, Schmidt wanted to know if students were taking away meaning from texts.
It's the shifting year, so they do less around teaching students how to read by them because most of the students know how to read. So then that's when they are starting to work on the comprehension.
Here's the thing. Reading skills are important at every grade level. But research shows it's especially important for students to be reading proficiently by the end of third grade. Up until that point, students are learning to read. But when they return for fourth grade, students are reading to learn. Fourth grade texts are more complex, and skilled readers will gain knowledge from what they're reading. Third grade is also the first year students in Pennsylvania take a standardized test. It's a data point policymakers can use to evaluate how schools are performing. Some educators argue that standardized test scores aren't a great measurement for a number of reasons. They say it's a snapshot of one day and not all kids are great test takers. But research shows that students who aren't adept by third grade are likely to remain behind in other subjects. They're also more likely to drop out of high school and live in poverty. And racial and economic gaps persist, and students with disabilities face even greater challenges. In Pittsburgh public schools, nearly half of students scored below proficient on last year's state standardized test. Half of students aren't meeting the benchmark. Overall, the state's second largest district is performing worse than the state's average. Chief Academic Officer Monika Jenkins isn't satisfied.
It's disheartening on so many different levels because you look at your demographics, and you know where our kids are going. You know how important reading is to life, and so you wanna just fix it, and you can't, and so you kind of feel handicapped. And when I say fix it, it's like that magic bullet. There's not a magic bullet.
She also says it's not an issue unique to Pittsburgh. Nationally, more than 60% of fourth graders are not proficient readers. That's according to the National Assessment of Educational Progress. And that figure isn't new. According to the data, scores haven't improved much in the last 30 years.
It is going to take a litany of individuals getting together to try to figure out, you know, what do we do and how do we do it? And I think we're on the right path. I'm not even going to say think. I'm going to say I'm confident we're on the right path. It just takes everyone's commitment to get there.
Jenkins is quick to note that too many students come to school unprepared. That's according to the district's internal measurements. And that deficit largely affects African-American students. Earlier this year, school board member Sala Uddin took district leaders to task about the low test scores. Administrators acknowledged that there is room for improvement, but that the district has seen steady growth. More kids are entering fourth grade at a proficient level. They defended the nearly $6 million curriculum tool, ReadyGen, that the district purchased in 2017. Uddin told me teachers have concerns about ReadyGen.
Especially the teachers who were around when more phonics was used to teach reading in Pittsburgh. And those curricula have been replaced by ReadyGen, and the teachers universally don't like it.
What do teachers say they don't like about the curriculum?
It doesn't prepare the kids to read.
What does it mean to not prepare them to read?
I have not drilled down into the specific techniques of teaching kids how to read. The teachers really don't talk about those details. They talk about the end result. And the end result is the kids are less capable under the current curriculum than they were with previous curricula that were more heavily based in phonics. So what's clear to me is that the original concern I had about the general academic performance is affected by the reading performance. Because if kids can't read, then they can't do the other subjects. They can't do math. They can't do geography and history. It's all reading based. We don't want to write off children who are in upper grades, fourth grade, middle school, high school. There are interventions that can be made to compensate to some degree for the lack of phonics skills that they should have received in earlier grades. So we have to do that too. Mm-hmm. But I think that the greatest concentration needs to be in getting kids into pre-K, making sure that the pre-K and kindergarten programs are not babysitting programs, but are learning programs, and then getting them into the first grade, second grade, and on grade level by third grade.
How will this follow a student through their life if this doesn't happen early on? You talk about interventions, and that's possible, but like, we want to set kids up for success before third grade when they make that important switch. So how will this follow them?
My concern for poor Black children, especially males, is that we're talking about life and death. For many of them, dropping out of school and getting involved in criminal activity to make money to survive will result in imprisonment for many of them and in death, premature death for too many of them, because that is the door that's open to them. If they don't have a number of doors that are open by the fact that they have been well-trained, and the only door that is open is a criminal activity door, then that's the door they're going to go through. So what's at stake is their very lives. That's what their parents bring their babies to us, to save their lives, to educate them, to give them skills, to help build the values that they will need to make smart choices that keep them out of criminal activity, out of jail, and out of the graveyard. That's what's at stake. It is very, very serious. That's why it's so urgent for me.
You said urgent, and these numbers, this has been the case for many, many years, right? There's been this gap in reading, and we haven't quite figured it out. So why is there a sense of urgency now to make change?
Well, what makes it so urgent now is that we know how to fix it. We know how to teach kids to read. So why aren't we running as fast as we can to get rid of programs that don't work as well and install programs that do?
So, yeah, I mean, what do you want the administration to do at this point?
So we are at a kind of a standoff in Pittsburgh. Dr. Hamlet has, and his administration have pretty much said, this is where we are. We like ReadyGen. It doesn't produce good results, but we're going to stay here. Well, we have to be open to what will get better results. I don't care how much we have vested money into it. I don't care how much the teachers are and the professional development is based on it. It's not easy to develop a strategy for getting rid of a whole reading method and replacing it with a whole new method. So we have to figure out a way to work it in gradually, but systematically. And the board isn't there yet because the board, I think, has a lot of confidence in this new superintendent. So part of making this decision about reading has a lot to do with how much they like and trust the judgment of the new superintendent. I like him, but I like competent readers better.
Pittsburgh Public School leaders have responded to O'Dean's concerns. Superintendent Anthony Hamlet wrote a blog post, brought his leadership team to a board meeting, and released a video, all to describe the district's, quote, balanced literacy approach. High school.
Not every student learns these skills at the same time or in the same manner. A one-size-fits-all approach to reading instruction will not work. In fact, it only widens the achievement gap.
Hamlet says there is some, quote, misrepresentation that the curricula lacks phonics instruction. He says that is not true. Why is that important? Well, not everyone agrees on the best way to teach reading. You have some educators who insist that children learn through context and picture clues. Those are the whole language proponents. Others say there has to be explicit phonics instruction, which teaches students how to decode words. Writing is a code that visually represents speech sounds. Kids learn to read by figuring out how to crack the code. They have to understand that words are composed of sounds, also known as phonemes. Whole language proponents argue that kids lose interest in reading when they have to break down words by sound. They also argue that reading comes naturally. The fight between Team Whole Language and Team Phonics was so fierce in the 1980s and 90s that it became known as the Reading Wars.
People are very opinionated about reading. I don't know why. I really don't know why.
That's Kate Stuckey, who trains literacy teachers throughout Allegheny County. She works with the Allegheny Intermediate Unit that serves the 42 districts outside of Pittsburgh. About 28% of third graders from those districts scored in the basic or below basic categories of the state standardized test.
But I would say that, you know, no, not everyone in the county, I think, has the information that they need about the science of reading.
The phrase science of reading was coined about 20 years ago when Congress assembled a national reading panel in response to the reading wars. The panel was tasked with figuring out if science supported either side. After 2 years of combing through the research, the panel determined that explicit and systematic phonics instruction was best supported by the science for all learners. Stuckey focuses on teachers who work with students who struggle with learning disabilities like dyslexia.
What works for students who struggle is what's best practices for all kids.
When it comes to learning to read, the National Reading Panel determined you need to master 5 skills. 1, phonemic awareness, the ability to hear sounds within words. Stuckey says manipulation of sound is required of proficient readers.
If you said, tell me all the sounds you hear in the word beach, and a student would say b-e-ch, so 3 sounds in that word. So regardless of the print, we're not thinking about the print, we're just thinking about the sounds.
The second component is phonics, letter sound association. Think about when a child gets stuck on a word. You probably told them to sound it out. That's because you have mastered phonics.
I'm able to look at a word like beach, and I've been taught that EA pattern for long E, and that CH can spell ch at the end of a word immediately following a long vowel sound, right? Rather than the TCH spelling.
The third component, fluency, is the ability to process text automatically. Fluency is mastered when students get past reading like a robot. They also have to read the words correctly.
And really that accuracy is very critical because you have to be accurate before you can read fluently and read with expression.
Component four, vocabulary, word knowledge.
So I might not always use, you know, these kind of complex words in my everyday speech, but if someone says them to me or if I read it in a book, I know what that means.
And five, the end goal, comprehension, creating meaning with text, which sometimes draws from what a child already understands about the world.
When you have that background knowledge, it really helps support your ability to comprehend. And background knowledge and vocabulary are so tied together.
The National Reading Panel's report also shaped a new way to describe literacy education, balanced literacy. Remember the reading wars where it was whole language versus phonics? Well, balanced literacy essentially blended the two. And that's what PPS does. Chief Academic Officer Monika Jenkins calls the approach a balanced rotational model. Think about it this way. Jenkins says if a teacher has a class of 15, most of those children aren't struggling with mastering the same skill. So a teacher needs to have many tools at their disposal to be able to identify and address those needs. If that teacher introduced a book, the class might read it together, but then the students disperse into groups.
So now we're into rotational model, where some may go with the teacher, some may go and do a writing activity, some might be doing some independent reading and doing some practicing of those skills that were applied.
That model sounds like this.
Goldilocks was hungry. She tasted the porridge from the first bowl.
This porridge is too hot.
These are second graders at Beechwood Elementary School. They're in the hallway acting out stories.
So she tasted the last bowl of porridge.
This porridge is just right.
So she ate it all up.
The students have been reading different nursery rhymes in this way throughout the year. Their teacher, Laura Ambrosio, moves between groups, stopping to help readers sound out words and encouraging them to read with expression. Many of these students are combining all of the components that the panel identified. Here's 8-year-old Talia Evans.
These are old books that we used to read, so we got more and more fluent to read it, and they became our best friends.
The class spent a lot of the year thinking about characters and how they change over the course of a story. And for students like Brayden Bobitsky, that makes reading feel like it's not a chore.
I just really enjoyed reading this year.
And Brayden made sure to give his teacher a shout out.
Yeah. And if you want to read great books, I recommend Miss A's Classroom, second grade, Beechwood School.
Elementary school, Beechwood Elementary.
Kids love reading when they're fluent. The report from the National Reading Panel cemented the fact that kids get to fluency through phonics instruction. Jenkins says the district does not negate that.
We ensure that the kids get the foundational skills, but in multiple ways. And it may not look as our traditional schools look like when I was teaching and when I was in school, because our kids are in different places. And that's and when we think about the big picture, we have to be able to support the needs of our students, and they are varied.
The research shows that you need a trained person to be able to facilitate that process.
Just because I know how to read doesn't make me qualified to teach reading.
Stuckey with the Allegheny Intermediate Unit says research indicates that oral language comes naturally to children. Most can pick it up just by hearing it. Our brains have dedicated circuits for language. Reading, on the other hand, does not come naturally.
We don't have dedicated circuits for reading.
So if we know that and what the components of the instruction should be, why are so many kids still behind? Well, for one thing, at PPS, not all teachers have been trained to teach in its balanced approach. Administrators acknowledge that, and that's where literacy coaches like Tammy Schmidt come into play.
Our elementary teachers, some of them do understand the concepts of phonemic awareness and word building and blending and reading decodable books and getting into learning about vocabulary. And others, that's something that as a cooperating teacher, I feel that that's something that I need to teach them. It's part of their training. So if they're not getting that actually in their courses in college, when they do their field experiences and their student teachings and their internships, then they're getting it you know, from their cooperating teacher.
Almost every person I spoke to for this story who either works for a school district or trains teachers attributed low test scores to a number of factors, including how teachers are taught. One teacher who works for a system of charter schools in Allegheny County said she felt so helpless that she sought out more training. Now she's trying to scale that model. Five years ago, Kim Hare was asked to teach fifth grade after several years of working with kindergartners. She works for Propel, a network of Allegheny County charter schools. In her new classroom, Hare noticed that students who had performed well in her kindergarten class were now behind in fifth grade. One of her students was reading at a kindergarten level.
I needed to teach her how to read and write because she came to me in fifth grade and didn't know how.
Hare says she felt helpless. She knew that she needed more training. Through word of mouth, she heard about EBLI, evidence-based literacy instruction. The training is grounded in the five components identified in the National Reading Panel report: phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. According to the training website, teachers are given hands-on instructional practices and activities.
Within the first week, I was blown away and felt like I had been the worst kindergarten teacher in the world and first grade teacher. Because I learned so much about how to teach children to read and the research behind it, reading research and brain research.
She says she changed the way she taught. The fifth grader, who had been reading at a kindergarten level, finished the year at a third grade level.
And I was a believer.
Now, Hare is the assistant director of curriculum and instruction for kindergarten through second grade at Propel. She's working to get everyone to use EBLI. Here's what it sounds like in practice.
You're going to use my pencil into the dot cam, and you are going to say as you write, Sherry.
Danielle Straub's first grade class is working on identifying a sh sound. The students sound out the name Sherry.
Sh.
All right.
Sherry. Thank you, friend.
Then the students read a story and circle all of the sh words in that text, like special and Michigan, words that don't include the letters S and H next to each other, but do have a sh sound. Some students work alone, others are pulled into a small group with an instructional specialist.
All right.
They're decoding the word addition.
This is all by itself. Right?
Straub says her students are cracking the code. This is her first year teaching first grade, after many years in kindergarten and second grade.
Most of my first graders now are reading more proficiently than my second graders were last year.
Straub uses the model that Propel wants all teachers to eventually practice.
I feel like I've been teaching wrong this whole time.
She felt the same way Hare did after receiving the training.
We weren't hurting our kids. You know, our kids were still definitely learning. But we just are noticing that this is a better approach for success in the long run and not just the here and now.
Before taking the training, Straub would have focused on letters rather than sound.
For example, for a sight word, if the word is there, I would say T-H-E-R-E, T-H-E-R-E, and chant it. So telling them the spelling. But now if I was teaching it, I would say V-A-R, and I would teach them the code for each of those sounds.
She still teaches what educators call sight words. They're the common words kids come across in kindergarten through second grade text. But now she teaches those words through sounds.
If I'm teaching the A, long A sound, then I would teach words, sight words, or, you know, with that sound, like the word they is spelled T-H-E-Y. E-Y is a code or a spelling for the A sound. So I would teach they when I'm teaching the A sound spellings.
Hare says it's the difference between teaching kids to be guessers and teaching them the tools they need to be skilled readers.
It could be the big blue bear kicked the ball, and there's all those buh words, and you have a big blue bear picture kicking a ball. Well, if all you know is buh, you're going to guess, oh, the ball and the bear are there.
Guessing will catch up to students when they begin reading chapter books with few pictures. Now the instructional specialists who are co-teaching in classrooms are using the model Hare favors, Propel is hiring more of those specialists. Next year, the system is rolling out a new curriculum plan, so everyone will be on the same page. The charter chain still has work to do, which can be seen in their standardized test scores. At the low end, only 33% of Propel Hazelwood's third graders scored in the proficiency category. At the high end, 75% of Propel McKeesport third graders reached proficiency. Hare says part of the solution will be better engagement with parents to make sure kids come to kindergarten prepared. Another part of the equation is teacher prep.
I can just speak personally for myself. I did not learn how to teach reading. I learned a lot of theory.
In the second half of this special, we will talk about solutions. We'll hear from university leaders and out-of-school time program coordinators about how reading scores can be improved. Most people studying to become educators spend at least 4 years in college thinking about practicing teaching. That practice looks different at every institution, but all of the programs put students in classrooms alongside an experienced teacher. Many educators say while that experience is meaningful, they're concerned that teacher prep courses are not training future educators about how to teach students to read. I spoke to professors at two Western Pennsylvania universities that certify hundreds of teachers a year, Slippery Rock University and Indiana University of Pennsylvania. I asked Sue Rigg, the Dean's Associate for Educator Preparation, and Julie Ankrum, the coordinator of IUP's Reading Specialist Program, how the university ensures that teaching candidates learn the science of reading.
We have a large number of field experiences that all of our students participate in. And so everything we teach them in a classroom can be and is actually applied in a classroom. So we do spend time on theory, but that's important to understanding the practice. And we spend time talking about the science of reading and the development and acquisition of literacy. And then we expect them to apply it in classrooms. And we mentor them as they actually apply it in classrooms.
Tell me about how you used to teach reading and how you teach it now.
Ashley, I'll start with how you used to teach it and then let Julie answer how to teach it now. I was a kindergarten, first and second grade teacher. So many years ago when I first started teaching, it was basically learning your letters, learning letter sounds. It was all phonics, pretty much, with some sight words, you know, the basic pre-primer words, the and or. We taught the very basics that way. Color words, we started with color words. So it was a very, very basic phonetic approach with some sight word recognition. And that usually, when I taught kindergarten, we were still teaching colors and sounds. We weren't getting into the writing and reading. Where it has evolved now, I spend some time in kindergarten classrooms volunteering, and students are actually writing. Literacy has a more writing focus now than it did many years ago. And I'll let my colleague here expand on more today.
Right, and I'll just start with what you left off on. So research has, you know, developed over time, and we know about the reciprocity between reading and writing processes and how important it is to develop both simultaneously in young learners. And because of language development, we know how children develop language, and the earlier the better. So there used to be sort of a pushback to teaching reading in kindergarten or teaching writing in kindergarten, and now it's embraced. Like, this is the time to do it, this is what we need to do. So, but as Dr. Rigg just mentioned, it's a much more comprehensive approach than it used to be. It used to be skills that were taught, letters, sounds in isolation, and now we still explicitly teach those, but in the context of authentic texts, so that students are actually reading whole texts in kindergarten, writing whole texts, and there's a variety of approaches that ensure that that happens, but that's probably the biggest shift.
How are your students prepared to prepared in, I guess, the differing schools of thought around teaching reading?
In the graduate program, we actually talk about the reading words. We talk about the context, the political context, we talk about the social context, we talk about the historical context of literacy instruction. And so we talk about that, and we talk about different approaches. Because while I might value certain approaches that are research proven, scientifically proven to work, there are other approaches that I don't value that are also scientifically proven by other people to work, right? So we talk about all of those and talk about personal beliefs about learning and personal beliefs about teaching and how that plays a role in selecting what works best for your students and for you as a teacher. So it's really, throughout the program, we address the debate and we talk about both sides of the debate. And but that's in the master's program. In the undergraduate program, we have a small piece where we talk about historical approaches to teaching reading, but we don't dive into it quite as deeply. And
So our candidates, what we try to do is prepare them to understand that, you know, we can teach, as you said, the DIBLs, the DRAs, and all the other literacy assessments and approaches to teaching reading, but when they go into the school, they're going to have to use the curriculum that is adopted by their school. Some schools give a little more leeway than others. Some have a very directive approach that you must teach the curriculum exactly as it is. Some school districts give them a little leeway, and that's what we kind of hope for our candidates, and that's why we try to prepare them in many different ways of teaching literacy so that they're prepared whatever their districts choose. And also we encourage them, as Julie said, in the master's program to be on those curriculum committees so they get to help make the decisions when a new literacy program is going to be adopted by a school district. We're hoping that our candidates are engaged in those processes.
If we know how to teach reading, we know the science of teaching kids how to learn to read, and we know that kids are capable of being proficient readers, why are there still so many kids who are struggling? Why is that?
There's too many variables to address that with a single answer. There are a lot of reasons that children aren't learning to read, and some of them are student issues with learning difficulties and teachers who are not trained well to address those difficulties. And sometimes it's just it's a teaching situation. So maybe we don't have high quality teachers in a specific school or a specific school district for one reason or another. Sometimes they're hard to staff schools. Sometimes there's shortages, and in some cases there might not be a regular teacher in a classroom every day. It's a different teacher every week or something like that. So there's all kinds of variables.
And with No Child Left Behind, that's where the third grade benchmark came into play, you know, many years ago. And I think we all have to keep in mind too that, you know, as Julie said, that is a predictor of how students will do in their future by third grade and beyond for some students. But I also have to think, we have to remember child development comes to play in this. Not all children walk at the same time. They don't all talk at the same time. They don't all crawl at the same time. They don't all get teeth at the same time. There's so many developmental issues. So for anyone to say that by third grade, children are, quote, failing because they're not reading, it's sad, you know, and it's very, for teachers, for us, when we know the children and we know their background and we know that they possibly had developmental issues, and then for the expectation to be, okay, you're a third grade teacher, now you have to get this child reading at a third grade level, it's unfair to the child. You know, so I think we have to think more about child development and to think more about every individual child. And just because your child is not reading at a third grade level by third grade doesn't necessarily mean that he or she never will. You know, it's a predictor, but it's not a definite indicator.
At Slippery Rock University, I spoke with Christine Walsh, an associate professor, and Beth LaGamba, an assistant professor, both in the College of Education. LaGamba says there are many reasons outside of teacher preparation that continue to contribute to underperformance.
When you're experiencing poverty, you just have so many life disadvantages that affect everything. And one way that it really comes out as a number is in a standardized test score where you had to read this third grade leveled passage about something you may or may not have ever heard of, but I guarantee those upper middle class kids have heard of it.
Walsh says students are getting a series of field experiences at Slippery Rock so they can see what it looks like to interact with a young child before they student teach.
I think what's really important about what we do in our teacher education programs is that we teach them a process to think about a literacy learner, to be responsive to the needs of the literacy learner, and to cautiously look at needs, because it's really easy and sometimes human nature to look at needs from a deficit model, but with a miscue analysis, with saying, what cueing system is that reader using what additional cueing system can we scaffold and support that reader in using to grow that reader? That we need our pre-service teachers to leave understanding that process. And I really believe that with the developmental, sequential, and rigorous field experiences that we have in place, that by the time they leave our program, they have the notion of the process, and then they can grow in their own professional development to be a responsive teacher.
LaGamba teaches a junior year course about assessment and how to use data to design instruction. In that course, students partner with a first grader in a local school district.
They do look at state standards and what would be appropriate to teach children of that grade level in general, but they have to pair that with, yes, but what do we know about this learner and what skills and strategies they're coming with, and then what skills and strategies would be the next sort of level that we can support them or scaffold them to achieve. And they have to weigh both. They have to think about, well, this is what the state is saying that first graders need to learn, and yet this learner maybe already accomplished that, or maybe this learner can't work on that yet, because I've seen through authentic assessments of really seeing them read and write that they need this other thing first. So that's, I think, a really good experience so that they can make some of those decisions in their own classroom.
Walsh says Slippery Rock University teaches future educators a blended approach to teaching reading. It teaches an approach called scientifically based reading research and an approach called emergent literacy.
Although they're coming from different points, this is about authenticity and being immersed in it, and teachers gradually handing more and more responsibility to you. As soon as you've been able to do that task of reading, now let me give you a more complex task and let me immerse you and scaffold you and so forth. It's that authenticity approach. And then over here, we have the scientifically based. But see, if we just relied on the scientifically based, those are very skills. That's not the authentic reading and writing. That's kids understanding, oh, reading means doing these skills and doing these kinds of things. That's not reading. But these are the skills that support this. So while they're coming from different stances, both are needed.
Research shows that a properly trained teacher is an essential component in helping kids learn to break the code of reading and writing. University and K-12 leaders in Western Pennsylvania say people outside of the classroom also play an important role. Here's Pittsburgh Public Schools Chief Academic Officer Monika Jenkins.
I know it's frustrating. I know it's difficult. But sometimes it's easy to point the finger. It's easy to say what we're not doing. But if you go in and partner with the teachers and partner with the district to support the child in the process, we can get there together. If we just say, you gotta do it and you gotta do it alone, it's gonna take much more time.
Tanisha Bice knows that to be true. She's a mother of three girls, ages 5, 9, and 10.
Knowledge is key, and in order to retain knowledge, you have to read, because a lot of knowledge are in books.
Bice is a certified nursing assistant, but didn't complete a four-year degree, something she wants for her children. She reads a lot of books about other fields, like psychology. She says she enjoys reading. That's also something she wants for her kids.
You don't completely need not to dismiss college, because my children are going to college, but you can be your own teacher. If you know how to read, then you can be your own teacher.
When her oldest child, Sinai, reached the third grade, Bice noticed she was behind. While she could read, she struggled with spelling.
But that wasn't good enough for me. So I know that as teachers, they can only teach so much, and as a parent, you have to help your child along if you want your child to succeed.
She purchased LeapFrog electronic books that Sinai could read on her own. She also hired help.
I got her a tutor.
The tutor helped Bice know how to work with her daughter, but it was expensive. So she took what she learned and put it into practice when reading with her. The tutor told Bice that her daughter needed to break words down by the syllable.
So for her, and fourth grade, she was still breaking the word down when she should have been maybe in second, still, you know, and past that level. So we went backwards so she can go forward.
Over time, her daughter progressed. Now she's working with the 9-year-old on reading out loud. Many parents have stories similar to Bice's. Parents are a child's first teacher, but they need help too. Two of Bice's daughters attend Penn Hills schools. She is originally from Homewood in Pittsburgh, so she brings them to a reading program there once a week at Willie T's Barbershop. While the barber cuts hair, families gather to read books with children. Recently, they read poems together. Bice's middle child, Simone, read Way Down in the Music by Eloise Greenfield.
I get way down in the music. Down inside the music, I let it wake me, take me, spin me around and shake me. I get down, down, I get down.
Is that Eloise Greenfield?
I told her she read the poem today with emphasis, like putting, you know, question marks, and you gotta give it some character in your words, that I will give her $5. And she read it all day today, and she read it back to me and read it to y'all, and I think I'll give her $5. I think. I didn't promise. We didn't shake on it. So.
Simone doesn't have one favorite book. She says all of the stories the reading group chose this year are her favorite. She especially liked The Hate U Give. The 2017 novel follows Star, a black girl who speaks out when she witnesses a white police officer shoot and kill her childhood friend, who is black.
I liked how she was, like, confident, and I like how she speaks up for her best friend.
Cynthia Battle leads the Raising Readers program at the barbershop. She says it's important to pick texts that are relevant to the lives of the mostly black children who attend the reading group.
So I do keep it black. I keep it not maliciously, but because for so long there weren't too many books that offered information that our children could relate to.
Battle works for an early learning advocacy group, Trying Together. She runs Raising Reader programs in other locations too. At the barbershop, she invites police officers who work in the zone to read with kids. Officer Karen McNeil says she has watched readers like Simone become more comfortable reading in front of adults.
I've watched the children who are very hesitant, who have sometimes they have problems at school because they want to read, but their peers may not want to read, and they get hesitant and they stop reading, or they have all these excuses, and they come to a group where everybody wants to read and they're reading together, and it gets exciting and they feel comfortable.
Having McNeil there is intentional, Battle says.
A lot of the books that we read are based on the realities of this community, such as The Hate U Give, Dear Martin, and so on and so on. So I think it helps bridge that gap between the police officers and the community.
Battle also wants kids to have a space where adults other than a child's parent or teacher encourage reading.
You get an opportunity to make a mistake. I make a lot of mistakes. I always tell the children I'm the worst reader, but I'm gonna keep trying, you know. But to be able to make a mistake and you see that growth.
The Raising Reader group will start back up in the fall. Until then, Battle encourages the children in the group to read this summer at the library. Numerous studies show that children lose reading ability if they don't continue reading during summer break. But by the time school starts in the fall, teachers have to make up for that academic loss. It's known as the summer slide. In an effort to prevent that loss, the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh staff have spent the last few months recruiting students for summer reading programs. They go into schools to tell them they can get free books at the library. They try to entice students with cool prizes they may win if they read multiple books while they're out of school.
Read those books. That's what summer, in the summertime, because you're not at school, it's really, really important to read books on your own time, because that's what's going to help you be really, really ready for fourth grade.
That's Erica Heaton, telling a group of third graders about the library's summer programs.
Each time you read a book, you get a free book. It's as easy as that.
Heaton is the youth services librarian for the Hill District branch. She tells the third graders that if they read a book each month of the summer, their name will be entered into a raffle for prizes.
Things like slime kits, headphones, Legos.
For some kids, those incentives do the job. Kelly Fino works for the library system and says the biggest hurdle is getting kids to the library.
The library, we want to find as many ways to make a literate community. And not just have students thinking that reading is specifically for school, but also reading is a part of life, and to like kind of foster a love of learning and a love of reading.
Fino develops programs for BLAST, which is an acronym for Bringing Libraries and Schools Together. During the school year, BLAST team members visit Pittsburgh Public School third grade classrooms to read with kids and introduce library resources.
So if third graders can't read by the end of the year, they are four times more likely to drop out of high school. So that's why the library really targets third graders.
At the end of the year, they invite those third graders to visit the library branch closest to the school. Recently, students from Miller, an African American-centered academy, visited the Hill District branch. They take a tour of the building, ask many questions, and then gather for a story.
Be reading from the book today. Instead, me and my BLAST team have created some scripts or a play all about this book.
They act out the story Noodleheads See the Future. It's a book about noodle children, yes, pasta noodles, who devise a strategy for getting their mom to cook for them.
Guys, whenever we help Mama, she bakes us a treat. We should help make her a garden.
But digging a garden is hard work.
True. We need to help her with an easy job. I'll know we'll get wood for the oven.
Then she baked us a cake.
Cake! Let's go.
For some of the students, this was their very first visit to the Hill District branch. The program encourages them to read during the activity, but mostly the goal is to get them in the door. There are many reading programs in Pittsburgh. The library is just one of the resources. Educators have been trying to get kids to pick up more books for decades because they know what's at stake for individuals and for society. But it's challenging for a child to love reading if they're struggling. There's not one answer as to why all children aren't reading proficiently by third grade. Kate Stuckey with the Allegheny Intermediate Unit says there are plenty of barriers for kids in the county that can contribute to low literacy test scores.
I think we can always come up with reasons why, but we always have to stay focused on what we have control over. So when we talk about data and we talk about students, we have to focus on, okay, but this is what we can do. This is what we know to do that can work and can help.
Part of the solution is making sure all kids are prepared for kindergarten. Some, like PPS school board member Sala Udin, say that means expanding access to pre-kindergarten. Stuckey says better teacher preparation will help, too.
You know, we can focus on, you know, our standards. We can focus on those five big ideas. We can focus on, you know, phonemic awareness, phonics. But we have to make sure that we're considering those other pieces as well, too. But we can't make those excuses as to why children can't succeed or won't succeed.
I'm Sarah Schneider with 90.5 WESA News. This education special can be found online at wesa.fm.